Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk this Tuesday, January 28th edition, getting you ready for the Super Bowl coming up next Sunday here in New Orleans. And man, oh man, the festivities are going to be out of sight. Looking forward to the week of action. Radio Row is going to be a blast, seeing everybody, all the big celebrities and guests that we get coming through, plus former players. Definitely looking forward to seeing what transpires too in New Orleans. Don't know if you folks have seen this one that was put out recently about the Kirk Cousins curse. We'll simply put that no team that's ever lost to Kirk Cousins during the regular season has gone on to win the Super Bowl. Unfortunately for the Eagles, they did fall to the Falcons 22-21 on September 16th this past season. And really quick, looking at things, in 2016, the Packers lost to Kirk Cousins. They got destroyed in the NFC Championship. 2017, the Rams win the NFC West, but they lost to Kirk Cousins. LA gets eliminated in the wild card round. 2018, Eagles lose to Cousins of the Vikings. They go down in the divisional round of the playoffs. 2019, it's the Eagles again losing to Kirk Cousins. They would fall to the Seahawks despite winning the NFC East. In 2020, the Packers were defeated by Kirk Cousins, and despite being the top seed in the NFC, they lost to Tom Brady and the Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game. 2021, Packers once again that top seed in the NFC, but they lose to the 49ers after falling to Cousins in the regular season. 2022, the curse hit the Buffalo Bills, who had gone on to lose in the playoffs after going down to Cousins in the regular seasons. They were a Super Bowl favorite that season. And in 2023, the 49ers, San Francisco, losing to the Cousins and the Vikings in Week 7. They went on to lose the Super Bowl to the Kansas City Chiefs. So I know, spooky right there. The Kirk Cousins curse is alive and well.
That's hilarious, actually. And I remember that Eagles-Falcons game earlier this season. There was no way that the Eagles should have lost that game to the Falcons. But here we are. And so now the Eagles are cursed. And congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs for making history and winning their third straight Super Bowl.
We'll see if that ends up happening again, if the Kirk Cousins curse is very much alive and well. That'll be something to keep tabs on in the big game coming up February 9th. Looking at the Senior Bowl, which is going on right now, a few assistant coaches for the Saints are taking part of that. Jari Evans is one of them. Our sideline reporter Jeff Nowak and a bunch of other reporters caught up with Jari at the Senior Bowl. We'll dip into our Senior Bowl sound bank and hear what Jari Evans had to say today in Mobile, Alabama.
Lots of questions.
Yeah.
The first one is, what's it like being a coach right now with uncertainty?
I wasn't expecting that. honestly, I wasn't even thinking about it. I'm here trying to do as much as I can for these guys. Like I told them in a meeting, I'm here to sharpen the tools in their toolbox and add things to their toolbox. I think back home in New Orleans, that situation to handle itself. And when it does, I'm pretty sure I have an opportunity to stay.
Yeah. So you feel like hoping you have an opportunity to stay in New Orleans?
I don't know.
Regardless.
It's my first go around. The team hasn't had change in almost 20 years at the head position. Right. So I think it's a lot of people's first go around with it in the building. And I'm here now representing the Saints. And my job is to, get my notes on these guys, help these guys be better. And as long as I'm employed, I'll still be working.
Tough for some of your coworkers, though. Like, do I take another job? Do I stay and wait? I guess your situation's a little different since you have such long-standing ties.
It's only my second year coaching. And there's been a few interests. I've got a few calls, but obviously I'm out here working. So, and I think the guys that had opportunities, have visited those opportunities. Yeah. Some have taken them, some haven't. I'm watching the news just like everybody else. Yeah. So,
did the coaches talk to each other and kind of go over like, hey, do you think this is a good opportunity? How does that go?
I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't talked to any of the coaches that got hired. You know, Clint, and I think Hodges just got hired. Cincinnati. I haven't talked to any of those guys. I'm glad DA got picked up. That's my guy. I think we all knew that he'll have an opportunity somewhere, and you know, he's in Chicago, so you know, AG went to the Jets, so I mean, all those guys are just telling congratulations, and we'll see where we stand here, and I guess in a couple weeks.
How have you kind of handled the process? Like, do you kind of just let your agent field all the calls? Like, do you?
No, I've gotten some calls personally from people around the league, but you know, I'm still under contract with the club, and I think the process is that they have to inquire with the club if they, you know, if there's a chance to move up, you know, in the position. So, but like right now, I'm just focusing on these guys and, you know, learning as a coach and working with these coaches here and having a good time.
How did this come about? Like, how do you kind of get in that, okay, I'm the offensive line coach of the Super Bowl. I've seen your bowl. How does that happen?
So last year I did the East-West game, and the way it works is our guys in management put the coaches' names in that they want to, you know, tell who runs the game that they want to put in, and then I think they select who it is. So I'm pretty sure when Joel was selected as the OC, then you know he had an opportunity to pick his guys.
It's who you know.
I guess that's what it is, but we all would rather be playing right now, you know what I mean? So that has something to do with it also.
Speaking of your second year doing something,
yeah,
what's next week like? You try to stay as busy as possible and
you know,
not pay attention?
Waiting on the news? No, I'm paying attention. You know? It's hard not to pay attention, but just taking it one day at a time, and it's not about if, it's about when. I mean, I think when you get to the finalists where we are with the NFL Hall of Fame, everybody's kind of deserving, right? So, you know, it's a process, and I can't go back and play any more plays, like I said before. So the work is out there, and, you know, just got to get the votes.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck, man.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
With Declan, the offensive coordinator job,
I know, right?
There's not a lot known about this guy, not a lot of tape on him. What can Chicago Bears fans, I guess, learn about Declan, or what can you share about
him? So Declan wasn't there when I was there.
Oh, no.
My last year was 16, but when I did the internship, the Bill Walsh internship, I think Declan was there. And he was a smart guy. He was showing me some computer things that you know, that he did when he was in college. And I know he's been coaching for a while. And, you know, he's another one of those guys that was at the, you know, was with Coach Payton and came through that system. So I think he's going to do well. He's a very smart guy.
Yeah, he was a tight ends coach, and then he went to Denver, and now he's an offensive coordinator.
He is, man.
You're on?
Say again, is that
the track you think you're on?
Who, me? My track right now is to handle the trenches, man. I think this game starts in the trenches. You know, we got to be able to move people all the ball, and these coordinators want to throw the ball 30 times a game, so you guys got to be able to protect. And I think there's a real value there, and I think I have value to bring to the club with that.
You got your first round picks on your offensive line here?
Man, we got three already. I don't know if they're going to allow us to get another one. You know, we got to stay healthy, but I got my eyes on a few guys. You know what I'm saying? Got my eyes on a few guys, and we have some IPP players that are pretty big too, so that, you know, we'll see how they panned out as well. But yeah, I think we got some ballers here.
Do you already find yourself being like, I know so much more about these guys than all the guys we talked about in theory last year and stuff like that?
Like, you mean like,
when you get to work with them?
Yeah, so
practice.
So my experience with the East-West games, I got to see those guys, and you know, and I got to didn't watch these guys play last year, and I was able to compare.
Josiah was one
of my guys at the East-West game. Glad we had an opportunity to get him late. I think, you know, keep working with him, but he's a big body guy, so I think it definitely helps me to have coached that game last year to now coach the top guys and see the difference in size and how they move and their athletic ability. So, but I think we had two or three guys from that East-West game last year wind up starting this year in the league. So, there's value to being here and gaining my perspective and evaluation of these guys.
What was that last moment of practice? Was it a tiebreaker? It came down to?
Yeah, competing, the competition.
But, I mean, that very last one was O-line, D-line. Right?
Yeah, the loser had to do 25 push-ups. Yeah. So, defensive end hit a little inside spin move, but, you know, we closed the space and we washed him down, and that guy blocked him up. I got Carson blocked him up. So
coaching?
Say that again?
Just coaching?
Well, you know, for a couple, the last 3 days, yeah, I always think so. But these guys are coming with these tools from college, and I think that the one thing you don't want to do is try to change what they've been working on for a whole, you know, body of work for the season. You just want to try to sharpen them up, give them some tips, because they're going to be confident at doing what they're doing. You know what I mean? So after I go watch this film and, you know, see what, how I can help them be better, that's where I'll interject a little bit more and then get a little bit deeper in it. But they competed out here today. And these guys, they haven't been in pads for a while.
Yep.
And that's not easy in the trenches. So I'm pretty pleased with today.
That's Saints offensive assistant Jari Evans out at the Reese's Senior Bowl. He is coaching the offensive line out there on the American team. And you got guys like Kansas tackle Logan Brown, Missouri's tackle Armon Mimbu, and also a trio of LSU Tigers and Garrett Dellinger, Miles Frazier, and Emory Jones that he gets to work with. And sounded pretty confident, Charlie, that whoever ends up becoming the head coach of the Saints, that he's likely to have a job at least still with this black and gold bunch, and not, you know, considering all the change that could happen. You don't know when a coach comes in if your status is safe.
Yeah, he said that he was kind of keeping an eye on it like everyone else, and we'll kind of see how it goes out. But as you mentioned, Steve, he's coaching the American side, Emory Jones, you know, Miles Frazier, Garrett Dellinger, obviously the LSU boys that are on that side. Jonas Savanaia is how you say his name, from Arizona, a gigantic offensive line prospect from Arizona. Armon Mimbu, who Mike and I talked a little bit about. When Missouri played A&M, Missouri got smoked in that game. But Armon Mimbu went up against Nick Squirton, who's one of the top prospects at defensive end. I know Mike's not a big fan of him, but he's going to be, you know, a maybe late day one, early day two pick. Armon Mimbu took him to class. Like, that dude, Jeff has brought him up as well, the offensive tackle prospect from Missouri. And he's not like built like a typical offensive tackle where he's like 6'3" instead of a little bit taller than that. But he can play tackle at the NFL level, and it's because of how smart he is. So he's going to be a guy that I'm keeping an eye on throughout the Senior Bowl process. I can't wait to see, because he could be a late riser as well. Mike talked about Josh Connerly from Oregon being a guy, offensive tackle, that could end up being a top 15 pick, kind of rising like Taliese Fuaga did at the Senior Bowl. It's a huge event for these guys. And Josh Connerly, but also Armon Mimbu is one of those guys I'm keeping an eye on as well. And he's getting coached by Jari Evans. It's hard to get better than that.
Getting psyched for the NFL draft, which will be just around the corner as well. We're going to take a break, go from the gridiron to the baseball diamond as we preview LSU baseball as they get ready for their season opener just a short time away, February 14th, opening day for the Tigers. Talking to Cokie Riley, who covers LSU baseball for the Times-Picayune and Advocate, right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, and oh, we're just 17 days away from college baseball's opening day. LSU baseball will be in action shortly to help us talk about the Tigers getting ready for hopefully a run to Omaha. Cokie Riley, LSU baseball and football writer for the Times-Picayune and the Advocate. Cokie, how you been doing, man?
Doing pretty well. How's it going?
Doing great. We didn't get really too much into LSU baseball media days, which happened right before the divisional round, the conference championship, sorry, in the NFL. We were kind of wrapped up all in that. But just curious, your initial takeaways from what Jay Johnson had to say during that big session, getting ready for another big season for this Tiger squad.
Yeah, I think with that press conference and really all the preseason stuff in general, I think, like, I probably have one main takeaway from each side of the ball. On the pitching side, it looks like they've stretched out eight guys for this upcoming season. Among them, Case Nevins and William Schmidt, the two freshmen, Anthony Ianson, Kate Anderson, Chase Shores, Gavin Guidry, just to name a few. There's kind of eight guys that are kind of vying for a potential starting rotation spot. Obviously, there's only three of them, so it'll be interesting to see how that sort of shakes out as we go through these next couple weekends before the season starts. And then on the offensive side, and on the other side of the ball, you're looking at Stephen Milo moving from second base to some position on the left side. My guess is it's going to be shortstop, but they've rotated him and Braswell at short third quite a bit through those first four scrimmages. So it's going to be interesting to see how both those two things sort of shake out. And yeah.
Real quick, Koki, before we get into the pitching, because I want to do a deep dive on some of these guys. So Stephen Milam potentially moving to shortstop, that would have Daniel Dickinson playing at second base?
Yeah, okay. I think Dickinson's going to be the second baseman. I would be pretty surprised if that doesn't turn out to what it's going to be.
And then with Braswell potentially playing at third. So that's kind of the infield questions shaped up. You know, it's one of the things that we were talking about a couple of months back when we were looking at all the transfers that Jay Johnson brought into this program, how the infield would actually look come February. But that's really interesting. You know, at first base, Jared Jones, I think not getting picked in the draft and coming back to school was kind of a surprise for a lot of people. But now he enters the year as one of the best players in the entire SEC. And when you look at, you know, a lot of the preseason polls from whether it be D1 or Perfect Game or Baseball America, they all have LSU in the top three. And I think their offense is going to be great, but kind of headlined by Jared Jones returning for his upcoming junior campaign.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they're going to need his power in the lineup. They don't have a ton of obvious, you know, 20-plus home run guys on this team. Luis Hernandez did hit 23 last year at Indiana State. How is he going to translate to the SEC? That's still a bit of a question. So, and really outside of him, they don't really have a ton of other big, powerful bats in the order. Maybe Dalton Beck can become that guy. He has a decent amount of power. Kader and BD, the freshman. Blaise Priesters hit the ball as hard as anybody. So I guess they have like some potential candidates there, some guys who can hit the ball out of the ballpark, but that's why Jared Jones is so critical for this team because, I mean, outside of him, they really don't have anyone else you can pencil in for 20-plus homers.
For you, how big do you think the addition is of Chris Martin, the former Houston Astros, now the new LSU baseball strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, I think they like the energy and the youth that he injects into this staff as a whole. I think he's under 30 years old. He's a guy who obviously has World Series experience, won a World Series title with the Astros, kind of brings that professional level of treatment when it comes to strength and conditioning for this team. And that's been a position that's been rotating for them quite a bit over these last few years. And now they can hopefully have some security with Chris Martin, given that he's the younger guy, you know, given that he's coming from professional baseball, unless another professional baseball team takes him away, I can't really see him leaving, for another college job. So, I think it was a much needed addition and it was a big point of emphasis to get that position right for Jay Johnson this offseason.
And then the pitching staff, Koki, let's do a deep dive on it because I think the weekend rotation, every single year we do this, right, where we talk about the different options for who's going to be the Friday night guy, who's going to be the Saturday guy. It ends up being different by like the end of the year anyway, so it doesn't really matter that much. But at the same time, it is interesting to talk about because they do have a lot of candidates to take over that Friday night gig where, you know, we're talking about February 14th, the opening day, who's going to be on the mound for LSU. It's like a big deal. And, you know, the first one I want to bring up is Chase Shores, who, you know, suffered Tommy John surgery, missed all of last season. But when he was a freshman back in 2023, he did start as a weekend rotation piece. And, you know, the 6'8" talented right-handed pitcher, I'm interested to see what his role is going to be early on. I know that I think we talked with you about this, Koki. If not, it was one of the D1 baseball guys where he was really close to returning last season if they just made a little bit deeper in the postseason run. But this is a guy that enters the year with very high expectations. I know that Jay talked about him, said, quote, his arm looks great. He's really throwing strikes, really like where the mindset is at, end quote, as well. So Chase Shores, the first one I wanted to throw at you, Koki, and what you've seen from him so far.
Yeah, in the scrimmages, it still seems like he's trying to figure some stuff out, whether it's with his command or whether it's with his just having better feel for his off-speed stuff, whether it's, you know, refining that slider or whatnot. And he's coming off of Tommy John surgery and the fact that he hasn't really pitched that much. Like, that's the thing. He's just got to get more innings. He's got to get more comfortable with his body and just pitching a mound against real live hitters. So that's going to be the key for him. So I'm really curious to see, like, what he looks like towards the end of this preseason, what he looks like at the very beginning of this year, because I think they're going to start the year with him as a starter, because I don't really see the use of having him kind of come out of the bullpen. He doesn't know when he's going to come into the game. He doesn't know how long he's going to warm up for and all that sort of stuff. Like, even if, you know what I mean? So, like, I just feel like he's going to be a starter to at least start the season. And if he plays up to his potential, as we've already seen 2 years ago, and can even exceed that, I mean, he's going to be, he can be one of the best pitchers in the country. Like, there's no stopping him from being that good. Like, the guys, we've seen him off to 100 miles an hour with a really good changeup. So, I'm really curious to see what his season looks like this year. But I think for now, I think it's safe to say that he's probably going to be in the rotation in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I agree, Koki. And then looking at another talented pitcher that I'm really excited to see in the purple and gold, his first time in the purple and gold. When we were talking about Daniel Dickinson, he was kind of a coveted offensive player, skill position player that they went and scooped up in the portal. But as far as a talented pitcher that they got, among the talented pitchers that they got, UC San Diego's Anthony Ianson, who, you know, played for the collegiate national team, Team USA, someone that was very highly coveted. Jay Johnson goes and gets him. Another guy that could project as a weekend rotation starter right off the bat for this squad. I'm really excited to see what he does as well.
Yeah, I think Ianson's definitely has a really good shot at making this rotation. I'm not 100% sure about that, just because, like you said, they have a lot of different options. And Connor Ware is a guy who I think people need to sort of get used to hearing his name. He's not as heralded. He wasn't as heralded of an addition because he came from the junior college ranks. But in the few innings he had pitched in junior college, he was absolutely dominant. And I think if he was healthier last year, he'd be in Major League Baseball right now. But, you know, I think the injuries, it made sense for him to try his luck in the SEC for a season before he goes off to professional baseball. But he's a lefty, has pretty good, really good command, fastball, right, 92 to 94. And he's just a guy who could provide quite a bit of stability in that rotation. And Jay Johnson said again that he was the best pitcher they had in the fall. And I think he's a guy who could definitely start for this team week one. We'll see. He's a very serious candidate. Him and Ianson and maybe a couple others are fighting for that third spot, I think, because I'd be pretty surprised if Kate Anderson doesn't make the rotation, given how sharp he's looked in the preseason and whatnot. And the fact that, you know, this is another guy who I would be surprised if he doesn't go off the professional baseball after this year, because he'll have a very, if everything goes to plan, at least, like, he's got that sort of potential to be a top two round pick in the draft.
You mentioned Kate Anderson there. I think I saw something where he's been working on refining his slider this offseason.
Yeah. He last year he did sort of like come up with a slider in thin air, out of thin air a little bit. But this year he's really tried to hone it, and it's a different type of slider now. So this year he's going to be throwing much more of a gyro slider. That's what he says. The gyro slider has that really tight spin, and it kind of dips, kind of falls off the table, like more like a changeup. He's going to have that pitch to go along with his curveball, which is already a plus pitch, and his fastball. And he just had really good command from what I saw in the fall, especially. And I'm just very optimistic about his season. And obviously he's now 2 years removed from Tommy John surgery, so he's got all that sort of stuff out of the way. He's got a year of SEC experience underneath his belt. He got better as the season went along last year after a bit of a slump in the middle of the year. So I'm very confident in him not just being the rotation, but being one of the better pitchers this season.
And then one of those names that may not be in the rotation early on, but it's one obviously to keep an eye on, William Schmidt, the freshman, the former Catholic High product that decided to stay in Baton Rouge. He was like a top 20 prospect in last year's MLB draft, but he took his name out of the draft and decided to go to college, which was definitely a surprise. I think he's one of the highest ranked recruits to ever make it to campus at LSU. It's definitely an exciting young player for this squad that, you know, Jay Johnson said it himself, that we'll see him sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he might be the most talented just in terms of where he was projected to go in the draft. It's like him, Cam Johnson, Dylan Cruz, and maybe one or two others. But I think he's a guy who could have, there's a world where he could have been the first right-handed pitcher from out of high school ranks drafted. Like, he was that talented. Fastball, like, in right up to the upper 90s. He probably had the best curveball in high school baseball last year. And he's a guy who I'm very excited to see what he looks like this season. And I think the changeups can be really key for him in order to survive in the SEC, because he's got a fastball that obviously has a ton of velocity, but there's not a ton of, I guess there's not a ton of movement to it. So since he lives high in the zone with that fastball, there's a chance he could give up a few homers if he's not careful with it. And I think if you add that, I think if he, you know, really develops that changeup and, you know, hones in that, and that curveball is already a plus pitch. Like if he can really have be a dangerous three pitch pitcher to go along with that velocity, I think he could be really good right out of the chute. But I'm glad that they're not throwing him into a starting role right away. I'd be surprised if he's in the starting rotation by the time we get the SEC play, at least. But to have a weapon like him in potential multi-inning role, it's just an incredible luxury for the staff to have.
We know that the SEC is the gauntlet that the you know, to go through every single season. Just curious, early on, for you, who are the biggest, I guess, trouble spots, teams that could cause the biggest amount of noise in the SEC this year besides LSU?
Yeah, I think Texas A&M is probably the team to watch, not just in the SEC, but in the entire country. LSU has to travel there towards the second half of the season. I mean, they bring back pretty much everybody except for Brady Montgomery. New coaching staff, first-time head coach there now after the whole Jim Schlossnagel debacle. But Jace Laviolette's probably the best player in the country. And they're just absolutely, that team's just absolutely loaded. They should probably be the front runners in terms of winning the national championship this year, just on paper. We'll see what their rotation looks like. They brought back a few guys. So they're the team to watch out for sure. And then outside of that, you know, the usual suspects, right? Like Arkansas is going to have a great pitching staff again. Tennessee is rebuilding, in terms of just like, they're not bringing back a whole bunch from what they had last year, but at the same time, they were pretty aggressive in the transfer portal, added a couple of really good players from Ole Miss, and we're going to see what they look like. And, the SEC, it's going to be really competitive. Like Texas is going to be interesting. LSU plays them. And LSU does play Tennessee, by the way. They come here about midway through conference play. So, it's a really interesting schedule, and the SEC is just, it's just going to be another great year in the conference. There's no reason not to think it's not the best conference in college baseball once again.
Koki, always enjoy hearing from you. Appreciate the time, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Koki.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
That's Koki Riley, LSU baseball and football writer for the Times-Picayune and The Advocate. And boy, oh boy, baseball can't. I know the Super Bowl is right around the corner, and we shouldn't be so excited about baseball season. But man, oh man, with the team that LSU has this year, it definitely seems like it could be another special season for this Tiger squad.
So the interesting thing for LSU is that when they actually start SEC play, they started at home against Missouri. Okay. That's a pretty easy beginning. But then you go to Texas. Jim Schlossnagel's new bunch is going to be interesting. You host Mississippi State. You go to Oklahoma, who's now new to the SEC. You go to Auburn. I should have mentioned that, obviously, Texas is also new to the SEC. You host Alabama. You host Tennessee. You go to Texas A&M, which is going to be a crazy series in early May. Then you host Arkansas, which back-to-back weekends, that's pretty impressive. And then you go to South Carolina. So the SEC slate, as you mentioned, Steve, it's going to be a gauntlet for this LSU team, but they're so talented once again. And Jay Johnson's just loaded this roster up for another run at Omaha, so we can't wait for it.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be right back. You can chime in on the Oaken Heart Jewelers talk and text line 504-260-1870. Be right back after this. Stay tuned on WWL. Want to remind folks, you don't forget you can have this show delivered directly to your phone absolutely for free. Listen to all 4 hours, one specific hour, or just get the hottest clips. Download the Odyssey app and follow Sports Talk. It is that easy. We realize you can't always listen to this entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want, how you want. That goes for Sports Talk and any of the shows you love here on WWL. Just download the free Odyssey app today and take control. And you can tell your smart speaker, play WWL. Taking a break, we'll wrap things up on this Tuesday edition right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, wrapping things up in... No head coach for the Saints just yet. Still waiting on that decision from the Black and Gold. And It's kind of weird, Charlie, that Mike McCarthy, I know, has been talked about, but we just haven't gotten any kind of lockdown date or time that he's going to interview with this team.
Doesn't it feel like it keeps getting pushed back?
Right. That's why I wonder, why couldn't they have, this has been done something over this past weekend? He's not locked down, and there's nothing holding him back from doing this right now.
And that's why it's a little bit intriguing that he's still kind of the heavy betting favorite.
Yeah.
Via sports betting at AGS recent odds feels weird. Yesterday. No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, there's the connection there. They probably are doing their due diligence with other guys like they did with Kafka and then Anthony Weaver over this past weekend.
So is McCarthy is still the betting favorite?
Yes. Like, heavily so. He's minus 300, and then second place is Kellen Moore at plus 250.
Plus 250 for him, okay.
So, and you know, but
is Riz in the third spot?
Yeah, Rizzy was, but kind of like we said earlier throughout the show as well, Steve, it feels like with Kubiak moving on to Seattle specifically, that decision was made. I don't know if Rizzy's still in the running because of that. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like if Rizzy was brought back, he would have liked to have, you know, Kubiak as his offensive coordinator for next year, but now, I don't know. Like, he would have to find a new OC.
Right. And so, unless it's something that he considers that was a, quote, Dennis Allen hire, and he wants to make his own staff. That's the only thing I could think.
Yeah, that could be the case as well, Steve. But I don't know, man. Like, it feels that it's a two-man race. And
right.
like Jeff said, like Mike said, we're kind of down to the end of this coaching search.
The only reason I kind of lean still Rizzy in the mix is just because of we heard from Alvin Kamara and Cam Jordan being pretty vocal about it. And obviously, those are two pretty substantial big names on this team saying something in favor of Coach Rizzy.
No, I get it. And they've come out and backed him, and I'm sure he appreciates that as well. However, I still do think it's a two-person job. I think it's McCarthy or it's Moore. And it's going to be up to the Saints, as I mentioned earlier, to decide, do we want to, you know, take the double and get McCarthy, someone that you know has skins on the wall, has had success in his 18 years as an NFL head coach, or do you want to swing out of your shoes and hire someone like Kellen Moore? And maybe it works.
And becomes the youngest coach in the NFL.
36 years old. And maybe it works, and he's a slam dunk, grand slam type of hire. Or maybe it doesn't, but it's still a risk that they would be taking, so we'll have to see what they decide to do.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition. For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller, and Mike Dettillier. Have a great night, everyone, and talk to you tomorrow. Who dat?